90% of the forests in Holland are dying from this acid rain. It's a very, very large amount of poison that almost all the forests are actually dying. So there are, and this is true in of the foods, especially the meat products. They're injected with hundreds and hundreds of chemicals after they're made ready for market, and of course into the animal before he's killed. So the food we eat, the water we drink, the air we breathe, it's all very, it's a very worrisome sort of thing. And in the Bhagavad, the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's described that this is one of the concomitant factors of the age. There's a lot of pollution, a lot of quarrel, a lot of difficulty, and above all, a lot of anxiety. This is explained in the very beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But people are characterized by anxiety in this age, this particular age. They are known as Manda Sumanda, and their behavior is very substandard as a result of this anxiety, and as just a general result of the nature of the age in which we live. So, how to untangle all these various difficulties? There's the threat of war as well, which plagues human society. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's explained that although we try to make many solutions to these problems, the problems become even greater than the original. The solutions, I should say, become even greater than the original problems. Now, an example of that is the automobile. I come from the country that invented the automobile. And they were very, very thrilled at the idea that they could get from A to B in just a fraction of the time. But then a problem came about that they couldn't produce roads fast enough to facilitate this new invention. So finally, the roads were made better and better. And after some time, the number of accidents increased. So then safety laws were passed. And the next problem occurred that there was a great deal of pollution going into the air. So they made devices to put on these cars. But they were more expensive. Cars became more expensive with the smog pollution devices. And eventually, despite all these pollution devices, I lived in Los Angeles for about 6 years, 7 or 8 years maybe. The air is very difficult to breathe. Sometimes when you're driving down the highway, tears stream out of your eyes. And if you ever fly into that city in an airplane on a clear day, you'll see a big black cloud. Not a white cloud, but a black cloud hanging over that city. You can barely see more than 2 or 3 miles, not even the nicest, sunniest day in the city. So the automobile was a great invention, but the solutions to the problems it created became greater than the original problem. In other words, it's easier to get about on a... We'd be better off if we just had bicycles or horses and buggies. So that is the nature of Kali Yuga. So these problems become an inextricable network. It becomes very difficult to try to sort them out one by one, to try to find a solution for this one, a solution for that one. Nonetheless, as Prabhupada used to say, Krishna consciousness is a solution. That there is also a concern that there is a lack of resources. We're running out of oil, and we're running out of all these things, running out of good air, running out of good consciousness, running out of morality. We're going to run out of water and food. All these things are worrying everybody, dwindling resources. But anyone who actually studies the Vedic literature and Krishna consciousness can understand that the real shortage and the only shortage in the world is Krishna consciousness, or lack of understanding what Sanatana Dharma is and what our real position is and how to act according to that realization. Because as soon as that understanding is there, then all of these problems, which are like a big knot, become unraveled one by one without any difficult, expensive, or long-term endeavors that don't even succeed in the end. Because our natural position is to understand this. This is our natural, original, happy, constitutional position. When we identify with the body, we identify with our community and our nation. Therefore, there's the threat of war. that this tract of land on this side of that line belongs to me and I have to defend it to the death. Well, that's actually artificial, because everything belongs to God or Krishna. It's a very simple fact. And because that very simple fact has been overlooked, because God is no longer thought to be alive or meaningful or a part of our lives, there's a threat of war, of annihilation of practically the whole human race. And because we are intemperate in our habits of acquisition and living, industry has grown so big and powerful that it is able to pollute the air and the waters without any restraint, despite so many laws that are being passed year after year. Someone told me this article in the Standard today, the Daily Mail, was complaining how the government wasn't doing anything about all this industry. It couldn't. It was a helpless, useless government because they weren't doing anything to stop the pollution of the seas and the air and so on. Well, they've passed many laws, and many politicians are campaigning. Many movements are existing to stop all these things. But because the consciousness isn't there in the industry and in the government, the consciousness is to acquire more than we need. It's to acquire excess, much, much more than we need. There's more bombs than we need, even to fight a simple little war. There's more cosmetics than we need. So many superfluous alcoholic cigarettes, so many things. Billions of acres are growing ingredients for liquor and tobacco products. And many people are going hungry. So this is due to improper consciousness or improper understanding of our real identity. Real consciousness is to understand that I only need a limited amount. And if everyone could just understand that simple thing, gradually all of these problems would unravel. In Vedic culture, which is the culture that Krishna consciousness comes from, those who were, this was extant in India 5,000 years ago, a culture in which those who were affluent and wealthy, they gave profusely in charity. They never became so bloated with goods and money that everything became out of proportion and that the millions were starving at the expense of the rich. But they gave profusely in charity because they had a common understanding that God is the ultimate proprietor of everything. So there was no scarcity and no anxiety about employment or getting enough to eat, supporting a family. So this simple understanding that God is the supreme proprietor immediately solves a whole array, myriad problems are taken care of. So this is the first and foremost activity of the human being, to understand Sanatana Dharma. Not to go about everything in a roundabout or indirect or misdirected way, the way we're going. Because, as the Bhagavatam states, these solutions simply create more problems. And the solutions to those problems, in turn, create more problems, ad infinitum. As explained here, this knowledge gives direct perception of the self by realization. This is not understood simply by book learning or intellectualizing that I am not this body. It may appear very obvious, but by realization means that we actually come to this realization that I'm actually not this body. So much so that even at the time of death, a devotee who's fixed in this consciousness doesn't become fearful. He becomes very peaceful because he has a sense of his next, of his future, of his destiny. And therefore he becomes free from fear altogether, because all of the fears that we experience are ultimately due to the ultimate fact that we have to die or leave this body. But one who understands who I am by realization, not just by intellectualizing, but actually realizes, yes, I'm not this body, he becomes very peaceful and satisfied. And even when there is disease and pain and difficulty and threatening and stressful situations, he's peaceful. There's another very important verse in the Bhagavad Gita that says, Bhoktarang Jagatapasam that Krishna is the ultimate enjoyer, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, he's the supreme proprietor, which we discussed. He owns everything, all the lands, all the businesses, all the food, everything in the world. And Bhaktaranjavatam Sarvaloka, Suhridam Sarvabhutanam, that he is the friend, the ultimate and best friend of all living beings. And Gyatvamam Shantim Richchati, anyone who understands these things, these three things, immediately becomes peaceful, attains peace from the pangs of material misery. Sometimes we're frustrated in our interpersonal relations. It's very common. Most marriages end up in a divorce at some point. Of course, people get remarried. But this was not the case 100 years ago or 200 or 300 years ago. It's the nature of the age that's very difficult for any kind of human relationships to endure and to grow properly. So to understand that Suhridam Sarvabhutanam, that Krishna is the supreme friend, and how he's the supreme friend, how he actually acts from within as the super soul and from without as the spiritual master, spiritual guide, again, we feel very satisfied because we have our most perfect intimate relationship with another being, a person. Krishna is a person. And when this is at the center of our desire to love another, then all of our relationships become purified and endure, or can be, understood better, and we can act from the spiritual platform in our relationships with everybody else. So, another very simple thing to understand how Krishna is acting with us as a supreme friend brings us to understand how relationships work, how to understand how the mind, the senses, the emotions are all working. So, when it is described that this is the king of knowledge or the secret of all secrets, it's not simply that there's a God, Krishna, who we love. Of course, that's also true on one level, but the philosophy is so multifaceted. The explanation of Krishna's various qualities and capabilities is so exhaustive that books filling this room wouldn't even touch but a tiny, minute fraction, infinitesimal fraction of all the qualities of Krishna and his activities and all the ways in which he interacts with his devotees, with all the other living entities in the material and spiritual worlds. These things would fill universes of literature, literally. We have published about 80 or 90 different books, and these are just scratching the surface. Of course, many of these have knowledge in very concentrated form, like the Bhagavad Gita. But just to give an idea how vast this knowledge is, it covers every possible field of knowledge, every discipline. So this is the basis of spiritual perfection, to understand who Krishna is, how he interacts or comes into this material world. And Krishna, the other part of this verse I mentioned, Bhaktaram Chakatapasam, is that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. Our gravest difficulty is that we, from the time we're born, we try to enjoy. Just like the little children, they're sometimes described as, I think the Freudian term is orally fixated. They're always trying to put something in their mouth, to bite it, to suck on it, to lick it, to swallow it. They're just constantly doing that because we're pleasure-seeking beings. As we grow older, we seek pleasure in more sophisticated ways, which virtually have no limit, because the human mind is very complex among living entities. While an animal is basically trying to eat, sleep, mate, and have sex, a human being enjoys music, enjoys so many different types of aesthetics. He enjoys more on a more subtle level. And his desires to enjoy are infinite. A human being can enjoy infinitely different things, as many things as we can think of and beyond and more. So we are always seeking that. But as we experience pleasures, we see that they aren't unlimited. In our youth, we may see that there's an unlimited amount of pleasure out there. But as we experience more and more, we begin to sense that there is a beginning and an end to pleasure. Every pleasure has a beginning and it has an end. And in old age, of course, it's very difficult because the senses are weaker. All of the senses are weaker, so we can't experience pleasure with the same intensity. So Krishna is described as Govinda. Govinda means he who gives pleasure to the living beings. Krishna is actually the source of pleasure. So when it is said, Bhoktarang Jagatapasam, that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, his pleasure is unending. So the pleasure a devotee of Govinda experiences is a spiritual pleasure, that given directly by Govinda. And that pleasure doesn't fade, doesn't dwindle. It's not something that we have to keep changing, going from one type of pleasure to another. But it's fixed. It's constant within the heart. So a devotee, even though he may be living very simply, without affluence, without a lot of material pleasures, he feels completely happy. Susukyam. He feels joyful, in fact. Not just happy, but actually blissful, joyful. Even though he may be living in a simple shack by the river. That's extreme, but he can live in a very simple way, and yet he feels completely happy. Because he knows that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, and he's enjoying as Krishna's servant. We were talking about service, how service is the Sanatana Dharma. His life is given to serving, not his senses, but to Krishna. And therefore, he's getting a constant return, a constant and greater reciprocation. The law of diminishing returns is present in our quest for pleasure. But with Krishna, that law is contravened, and pleasure increases without limit. That's the difference between spirit and matter. Spirit is unlimited, matter is limited and temporary. Spirit is eternal and ever-increasing, matter is temporary and comes into being for some time, grows, maintains, sometimes has some offspring,